Welcome to Bites, the podcast produced by the Rover Tobacco Control Library at UC Davis. I'm Joseph Martin, and in this episode, we're going to be speaking with Bob Gordon, who is Project Director of the California LGBT Tobacco Education Partnership, about the partnership's new project, Cigarettes and Pharmacies Don't Mix. This project is funded by the California Tobacco Control Program, and it's designed to provide training and technical assistance to other CTCP-funded projects working on tobacco-free pharmacy policies in their communities. We're very pleased that Bob Gordon could make time to speak with us today, so let's welcome him to the podcast. Thank you for joining us, Bob.
Hi, Joe.
I know you've been involved in tobacco control for some time and currently working with the California LGBT Tobacco Education Partnership. I wonder if you wouldn't mind telling us a little about that. What motivated you to get involved with the partnership? How long have you been there, and what is its mission?
Yeah, well, I think I have kind of an interesting story of getting into tobacco control. I was lucky enough to work in a smoke-free workplace for my last 2.5 years in Maine. So this was back in the late 80s, and that was a rare thing to have a smoke-free workplace. But I moved to California in 1993, and, you know, how did this happen? I found myself in San Francisco in a smoky workplace. It was a gay community newspaper. And at that time, the law in San Francisco, believe it or not, was that the owner had all the power, and the owner could decide. Was that workplace going to be a smoking one, or was it going to be a non-smoking one? And it was a smoking one, as I soon discovered. I asked, and it was so radical at that time, I said, can I work from home? And the owner yelled at me. She said, you knew this was a smoking workplace when we interviewed you. And it's true. She had smoked during the entire job interview. And now, can you imagine someone today, you know, either the person applying for the job or the, you know, the would-be boss smoking during a job interview today? So I guess I turned my anger into activism, and I had seen in the San Francisco Chronicle that the San Francisco Board of Supervisors was considering some legislation that would make every workplace smoke-free in San Francisco. And that was my first time. I was so nervous. Going to City Hall, telling my story in front of the policymakers, I distinctly remember that they listened to my story. I was so nervous that I would be found out. I didn't talk about my employer. But I remember they intently were listening to what I had to say. And since then, all of my workplaces have been smoke-free ones. So after that, I think it was in 1995, I started volunteering with the California Lavender Smoke-Free Project, which I think was the first LGBT project funded by California's Tobacco Control Program. And I volunteered for that project for 5 years. And, you know, that was a time when words like gay and lesbian were whispered, if they were said at all, in our tobacco control community. So what a different world it was back then, in so many ways. But at that time, bars were smoky. And one of the things that I worked on was to create some matchbooks that had the California Smokers Helpline number inside them, and those were to fight for space in the bars from the tobacco industry branded R.J. Reynolds and other matchbooks. So we had this sort of like counter matchbook campaign. So after years of volunteering, I decided to apply for one of the 7 priority population partnership grants. So that would have been around 2004, and that was with a mission to improve the health in the LGBT community. And, you know, with our LGBT partnership, our mission is to counteract through education and advocacy efforts the negative impact tobacco use has had on our LGBT community. So over the years, we've worked to ask elected officials to refuse tobacco industry donations. We've worked to create smoke-free policies so outdoor LGBT pride events can be smoke-free and healthier. And we've trained those wonderful counselors at the California Smokers Helpline, and a lot more activities too.
When did the Cigarettes and Pharmacies Don't Mix project launch? How does its mission fit in with what the LGBT Tobacco Control Partnership is doing?
Been a few years now. Since 2007, we've been working to inform and educate our colleagues and the community about tobacco-free pharmacy policies. And when we say tobacco-free pharmacies, We're talking about legislative policies that revise the tobacco retailer license, the TRL, so that a pharmacy no longer receives a tobacco retailer license. These policies are taken up by city councils, county boards of supervisors, and we're proud to have done much of the groundwork and organizing that resulted in passage of the very first tobacco-free pharmacy policy in the United States in San Francisco back in 2008.
Mm-hmm. A lot of people might ask, why focus on pharmacies? Tobacco products are available from many different sources. Why should we be making a special effort to make pharmacies tobacco-free?
I think a lot of people may not realize that the United States is virtually the only country in the world where tobacco products are sold in a business that is licensed as a pharmacy. So passing a local legislative policy can achieve a number of things, including obviously reducing the number of tobacco outlets in a jurisdiction. It improves health equity across that whole jurisdiction. And it enables pharmacists to do their job to help patients become healthier. Pharmacists are dispensing medications in the back of the store, in the pharmacy counter, if you think of a retail drugstore. How can chain pharmacies even think of selling addictive and deadly tobacco at the front of the store? So we like to say a pharmacy is a place to get better, not a place to get cancer or heart disease or lung disease for that matter.
So if a community is successful in restricting tobacco sales in pharmacies, how much of an impact does it make? Do we have any data on this?
There is some data. These policies are making an impact. The retailers are not happy about it. I think they'd like to continue taking in revenues from tobacco. But there was one retailer pretty famously in 2014 decided to voluntarily decide to end their sales of tobacco. And that was CVS, now known as CVS Health. They published a paper looking at the amount of tobacco that was purchased in San Francisco and Boston, two communities that no longer provided tobacco retailer license to any pharmacy. And the study showed that with the enactment of policies in those two cities, that it was associated with a reduction in purchases of tobacco products of 13%. And I think CVS wanted to do its own study, but it is available for others to see that CVS made a good decision in terms of taking that gamble. What would happen if they stopped selling tobacco? Also, that's a place right now where people, I believe, are going to secure a vaccine against COVID-19. So many of the pharmacy drug chains have tried to position themselves more as places of health. And certainly tobacco sales does not go in line with that.
Mm-hmm. And what about the impacts on business? Whenever we talk about restricting tobacco product sales, there are going to be people who say that law is going to harm small businesses. What would you say in response?
You know, there was a day decades ago when the average pharmacy was a small business. It was locally owned. I think so much about the late Fred Mayer. Fred Mayer was a visionary. He owned Sausalito Pharmacy. He decided, I think it was 1970, to take all the cigarettes out of his store. He had a master's in public health and said, what am I doing selling cigarettes? And he had a bonfire out back, which isn't great for air quality. But nonetheless, he was a visionary and decided that it just doesn't go together. So these days, you know, the pharmacy landscape is really dominated by the national chains, the Walgreens, the CVSs, the Rite Aids, the Walmarts, the Safeways. And they've stopped, like in San Francisco, stopped issuing the licenses to pharmacies. And the case there was within 1 year, even Walgreens that may not have liked that there, I think they had 67 stores at that time in San Francisco that could no longer sell tobacco. They actually invested in some Rite Aids that closed. They purchased those stores, even though those stores were also required to be tobacco-free. So I really don't think there's been that much impact on the businesses themselves, and certainly not on small businesses.
Mm-hmm. So what do we know about the readiness of California communities to support tobacco-free pharmacy policies? How many cities have passed policies, and how many are considering them?
Yeah, in terms of readiness of the communities, what's pretty exciting right now is that that every county in California is currently going through the Communities of Excellence process, and there's a required indicator, and one of those required indicators is pharmacies and other places of health in terms of selling tobacco. So each county is getting input through its coalition members about readiness. And very soon, we're launching an effort to increase the number of tobacco-free pharmacy policies in the middle of the state in California's Central Valley. We're looking to learn how we can, you know, best be supportive of the efforts that might be happening there. How can we support the local lead agencies? How can we work with the coalitions? Are there special challenges that come in terms of political will or decision maker or community support when it comes to ending the sale of tobacco in pharmacies? And I want to mention that when we say ending the sale, that means ending all tobacco. That's electronic smoking devices, flavored tobacco, menthol tobacco, Marlboro Reds, Marlboro Golds, everything. It's really the end game inside a pharmacy, and I know that we're all thinking and talking about endgame. Right now, to my knowledge, there are 48 jurisdictions that have passed tobacco-free pharmacy policies, and those range from that first large city, San Francisco, in 2008, to most recently unincorporated San Diego. Their county board of supervisors voted to end the sale of all tobacco in all pharmacies in unincorporated San Diego, and there are many other communities, large and small, in between.
Mm-hmm. If someone out there listening would like to start or support a tobacco-free pharmacies initiative in their community, how can they contact Cigarettes and Pharmacies Don't Mix?
We'd be happy to hear from anyone, so I have a phone number and an email that would be the best to be in touch. And the email would be bob@lgbtpartnership.org, or by telephone, and I can say it twice, it's 415-436-9182. Once again, 415-436-9182.
That sounds great. I want to thank you for sharing all of this with us today, Bob Gordon.
It is my pleasure. Thank you, Joe.
And thank you all for listening. The Vites Podcast is a production of the Rover Tobacco Control Library, which is a funded project of the California Tobacco Control Program. We're working on a series of episodes on all of the funded projects of the CTCP, as well as project success stories, new research, and other topics related to tobacco control. If you've got an idea for a podcast, or if you have thoughts or suggestions you'd like to share, please send me a message at joemartin@ucdavis.edu. That's all lowercase, joemartin@ucdavis.edu. I'm Joseph Martin, and this has been Bites.